You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Matariki is just 2 weeks away on June 24th, and there are progressively more discussions on how to properly celebrate the new public holiday. A specific spotlight has been placed on light pollution, with some regional councils receiving backlash on plans to put on fireworks displays. A petition has also been launched calling for the turning off of lights in central cities to clear the skies and make the constellation visible. To learn more about light pollution, I spoke to Richard Easter from UOA about how it could affect Matariki, as well as the world in general. I first asked him to quickly run over what light pollution is and how it is caused.
So light pollution is light, and it's caused by all the different things that we do as human beings that release light into the environment, particularly during the nighttime. And so, you know, in the city, you can see much less of the sky than you can when you're in the country. And we're looking for various ways to make sure that the light that is emitted is the bare minimum that's needed, and it goes to the places where it's needed and nowhere else.
We have several special start events happening over the next couple months in Aotearoa, such as Matariki happening, as well as the alignment of five of the Milky Way's planets. Are these events at risk of being obscured by light pollution, either now or in the future?
No, I mean, if you're in the city, you're going to see all of these things less clearly than you would do if you're in the country. I think that's a given. So from our point of view, the planets are bright. So if you go out very early in the morning, just as the sun's rising, you can see, Venus and Jupiter, which are the two brightest planets. And then if there's a line between them, you can see Mercury, Mars, and Saturn as well. And so those are bright objects. And as long as you're not, standing, right in the middle of, downtown Auckland, then you should be able to see, certainly Venus and Jupiter, even you can see from the University of campus, Auckland campus, without any trouble. And the others, Mercury will be the hardest, but more because it's close to the rising sun. So from that point of view, I think at least in New Zealand, light pollution is not going to obscure the night sky. But it's obviously something that, for many reasons, we want to keep it to a minimum. Not just for our benefit, but also for the benefit of animals that are out at night time. Various kinds of lights can have big impact on wildlife.
Outside of just difficulty seeing planets and the galaxy at night, what other wider consequences of light pollution in the future could it affect our health? As you mentioned, how could it affect animals' health?
So animals that need light, or that are nocturnal, some of them, particularly this, it's not just the question of how much light there is, but the kinds of lights that are used. And so LED lighting is replacing, more traditional, the kind of yellow sodium street lights that used to be more widely used sort of 10 or 20 years ago. And some of those LED lights, they have much bluer light, and that can be disorientating to some animals that need to navigate by night.
Is light pollution something that can be easily reversed?
It's not something that stays in the environment. If anything, you do to turn lights off or to put in better lights or to make sure that the lights are directed. So, if you want a light, a security light, for instance, you don't want to be firing light up into the sky, so you can put in a fixture that directs all its light downwards. And so oftentimes the most efficient way to use light is also the best way to use light. It's just that in the past, people have often just, put a street light in, for instance, without thinking about whether it's sending light up into the sky as well as down towards the ground. And so a huge amount of this can be mitigated with good design and with a little bit of thought about what's going on. And in many cases can lead to, better outcomes in terms of what the lights are required to do, better use of energy, but also that they're not directing light up into the sky, which is often then directed back down from, clouds or vapor in the sky, which just kind of creates this, what we call a sky glow, where, the sky itself has been slightly illuminated by the lights that are on the ground.
With Matariki specifically, there have been a lot of chats recently about some city councils proposing that they put on fireworks displays, and then iwi and other groups kind of discouraging this because of the issues that fireworks can cause regarding pollution. Can you go more in depth on how fireworks specifically affect the environment and light pollution?
So fireworks have limited effect on light pollution, obviously, because they're, you know, once they're done, they're done. But, you know, obviously there's a debate every year about, you know, light fireworks and, you know, their impact on, you know, wildlife or pets, or, you know, the question about, you know, whether or not, you know, fireworks are dangerous for people who are using them. I mean, obviously, too, there will be some, you know, cultural issues around how this is done. Manariki is, you know, it's about, you know, it's a solemn part of the year. It's often, you know, it's about the remembrance of those who have passed, for instance. And, you know, we see lightning, you know, fireworks more as a celebration. And so there's also some questions about whether, you know, the kind of celebration that we're looking at is necessarily, you know, is necessarily appropriate. And, you know, from that, the public, or the, you know, the celebration of Matariki is a national holiday. It's a chance to weave, you know, sort of new sense of community. And I think part of that would be making sure that what we're doing, you know, is appropriate and something that's going to work.
So if there is a risk of light pollution becoming a bigger issue in the future, what steps can we take to prevent this now?
So the thing to do right now is just to make sure that, I mean, that if you're, you know, doing anything that involves installing outdoor lights, that, you know, that those are designed in a way that is, you know, there are a variety of codes, some of which are, you know, formal standards, and others of them are best practice. And so they're pretty easy to find, and they give you advice about, you know, what kinds of lights you should use, how you should install them, you know, whether you want them shielded in terms of where their light's going, all of those things. Easy to do when you're putting lights in, but much harder to, you know, it's a pain to have to come back and retrofit them later on.
That was Robert Esther from UOA chatting about light pollution and Matariki. Alongside the environmental effects of light pollution, many are talking about the cultural issues of the inability to see Matariki in central cities. This is only one of many fears of how Matariki will be celebrated, with concerns being raised about the commercialization of the holiday and the possible loss of its meaning. I spoke to AUT's Paul Moon, who is a professor for the school's New Zealand History and Māori Culture programs, about the holiday, its significance, and what meaning could be at risk. We first spoke about what the holiday means to various people around the Māori community.
I would back off from saying that it represents something very similar for all hapu and iwi, because the more people investigate this, the more they find that many hapu have their own very distinct meanings. The ones that I'm familiar with see it really to do with death. They take it as a compound word, mate ariki, the death of ariki, or very senior, very elevated people in the community. And according to some hapu, they say from this time of the year onwards, the next few months, as it gets colder and wetter, it's more likely that the very elderly are going to die. Traditionally, that was the case. And so Matariki for them heralded a period of mourning and a reflection about death, meaning, and so on.
What does Matariki being recognised as an official public holiday mean for its observation?
It could be a two-edged sword. On the one hand, it's very useful in that it brings a lot of the culture and the stories attached to Matariki to a broader audience. I think if you went back 20 years ago, very few people knew about it. So it has much more awareness, or the idea has much more awareness in public now. However, the risk, of course, as with other things like Christmas and Easter, is that it eventually becomes commercialised and the real meaning is lost. And so there's that balance between making sure people are aware of what Matariki is, but at the same time not turning it into what some people have already described as just another holiday and not much more.
Issues have recently been raised regarding light pollution by some city councils considering the use of fireworks, as well as heavy light issues in central cities. What do you think could be lost if Matariki became obscured by light pollution?
Well, I'm not sure that many people particularly go out to look at this cluster of stars. Images of it have been reproduced, obviously, in the media. So for a lot of people, I suppose the go-to place is the internet if they want to know what a particular star layout looks like. Light pollution is always a problem in big cities, and there's almost nothing that can be done bar turning the electricity off, and that's not viable. So if people are keen, I suppose a journey to the country would be the next best thing.
Do you reckon that there are any issues for people to actually be able to access going out to rural places or having the time to drive out somewhere just to be able to see the stars properly and celebrate the holiday in that way?
Oh, there would be issues for sure for a lot of people. Just affording to get a bus to go out of Auckland is expensive, so it's, that's obviously a problem for some people. The issue is, though, Red, I suppose, is it a celebration? And again, we go to this point of how different hapū interpret it. And I suppose, really, ultimately, it's up to each hapū to say for themselves, this is how we see Matariki. We see it as a celebration. We see it as a time to commemorate, to reflect on what's gone on before. There's also a bit of myth-making that's gone on recently. I heard one media commentator say that Matariki is all about planting crops, and this is when you start planting crops. Well, that's simply not the case. As anyone who does gardening knows, you don't plant your seedlings at the onset of winter. And traditionally, that wasn't the case. So there's a bit of remoulding of what the meaning is, and that's something that has to be contended with as well.
Why do you think that the meaning has shifted so much between different people and different areas?
I think the original meaning probably was reasonably fixed. And I've sort of talked to people from several hapū across the North Island, not all by any means, but dozens. And I've been doing this on this particular topic probably from about 2002, so about 20 years ago. It was a feature that really wasn't a big deal for a lot of hapū in the sense of celebrating it. And that's why the commemoration of it now is I suppose it's the creation of a new celebration, if you like, but it's not something that was really seen as a celebration for hapū, and some of them gave no recognition to it at all. Others had different names for it. For other hapū, it was one of several events in the skies over the year that they would commemorate or recognise. So it's, I suppose in a way, it's become a focal point for all these practices of different hapū, and in a way also perhaps an entree so that people learn about this and they go, well, I wonder what else happened. I wonder what else these hapū did as far as astronomy is concerned and so on. And maybe that's an entry point for them to discover other things.
Do you think that there are any other ways that we could be celebrating Matariki in the astronomical sense? Is there any ways that people maybe should be working on like turning off the lights so that they can see the stars? Or do you think that it's more important for people to be just learning and teaching themselves about the holiday and what all of it means to different people?
I'm always reluctant about the word should, because I think it's entirely up to individuals how they react to it. I think we can probably see, and it doesn't take much future gazing to work out what will happen, which is the majority of people will recognise, oh, it's something to do with a cluster of stars in the sky, it's something to do with the indigenous culture, it's a day off, and that's about as far, and it's marketed in a few events, so that's about as far as a lot of the population will ever go. And we've seen the same thing play out with Christmas, Easter, Waitangi Day. I've been involved in research in the past on popular awareness of Waitangi Day, and it's pretty low, unfortunately. People say, well, there's a treaty signed in 1840, and that's as far as their knowledge of it really goes. That's a bit disappointing, but that's the way, I suppose, people have other priorities. They don't see this as necessarily directly connected to them. That then invites the possibility of, well, maybe there's room here for education, for Matariki not just to be promoted as a day off, but to be promoted as something that, as I say, offers an insight into a different way of looking at the physical world and also a different way of understanding what's important to communities. And these things can be teased out the more people probe it.
That was Paul Moon from AUT chatting about Matariki.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.